Welcome to another episode of the Pixel Drone Show, the show where we talk to industry professionals about what they do with drones. Your co-host today is Kara Murphy and myself, Greg Reverdio, and our guest is Christian Malika, and he's the author of a one-of-a-kind type of book, which is titled the FPV Flight Dynamics book, which is available on all the different platforms when you buy books. And Christian, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Greg. Pleasure to be here.
So before we go into the details of the book and talking about the FPV industry, I want to ask you, how did you even get into the drone world?
I got into drones probably, I think, 2014, 2015. One of my first drones was actually a Phantom, so I was kind of a camera drone guy first, and then I started to see some of the, you know, original Rotor Riot guys putting content out on YouTube, so Mr. Steel and Tommy, Chad Nowak, all the original Rotor Riot cast, and I was pretty much immediately in love with FPV. It was something that kind of just, you know, grabbed me and never really let go. I just sort of made an instant connection to it, and I knew it was something that I wanted to do. So I pretty swiftly moved, you know, from the camera drones into building and flying FPV drones in acro mode.
So you wrote a book, FPV Flight Dynamics, as Greg mentioned in the intro. Who would benefit from reading your book the most?
FPV Flight Dynamics, I wrote primarily as something to help new pilots get into FPV. So if you are someone who's already been into camera drones and you're trying to make the transition from flying something, you know, like a DJI drone in angle mode that has a lot of automated features into fully manual acro mode, it's going to really benefit those types of pilots. If you know absolutely nothing about drones, you want to just jump right into FPV, just go right into the deep end with it, it'll definitely help those pilots out too, because it kind of gives you like a fundamental knowledge base of, you know, like what these drones are, how these machines actually work, and then ultimately how your, you know, the inputs on the sticks actually manipulate the quadcopter's orientation in the air and allow you to fly it. So primarily, I guess, beginner and intermediate FPV pilots, but I kind of also wanted to write it in a way that would be interesting for even, you know, the higher intermediate and advanced FPV pilots, because I think that for as much content there is out there on YouTube, there's also a lot of fundamental concepts in FPV that are not really fully fleshed out. So I wanted to kind of shine a big old spotlight on the things that I felt, you know, weren't really getting the attention that they deserve. And so, like you said, it is kind of like a textbook. So I had to kind of like coin terminology for things and define stuff, because there really was just no agreed upon word for it in the community at that point.
Is this interesting? Did you get the inspiration because this is something you struggle with when you started, or you saw other people? What was the inspiration for the book?
So actually I was never really intending to write a book. What I wanted to do was found sort of like a tech startup, and I was trying to develop a sort of like modular quadcopter system that was going to be almost like the Alienware of FPV. So it would be kind of like mixing and matching components, which is not necessarily a new or completely original idea, but it, you know, in my opinion, no one has really pulled all the pieces together and sort of, you know, put it into one logical format for people. And I still think it hasn't been done yet. I'm kind of wondering why anyone hasn't done it yet. But anyway, I was trying to do that. Part of what I was doing in developing that product was kind of just creating sort of like a little pamphlet or a little manual that was almost supposed to be like a video game manual, so that when you got your quadcopter kit and you unboxed it, part of that unboxing experience was going to be just kind of like this cool like flip through manual that would show you some tricks and just some basic stuff. So long story short, I wasn't really able to get the company off the ground, but I decided, well, I have, you know, the materials for this pamphlet. Why don't I just, you know, turn it into a full-fledged book. And honestly, I thought it would only take me, you know, I don't know, 3 months, but actually it took more like a year to bring it into its final format.
Yeah. Writing a book, I'm sure, is quite the endeavor. Can you walk us through, this is really a question for me, because I've always wondered, what does it take to write a book? What are the big steps to get there?
It was a serious endeavor. There was so many different you know, parts to it. I mean, initially it just started off as just a giant brainstorm. So you're just like brain dumping ideas onto pages and just, you know, scribbling notes like a madman. And then you just kind of have to keep organizing it. I wrote out the entire manuscript. The original manuscript was about 150,000 words that I managed to edit down to about 85,000. What was particularly challenging with FPV Flight Dynamics was, like if you flip through it, it's, I mean, pretty much every other page has illustrations in it, because I just immediately knew if you're trying to write a manual to help people learn how to operate a high performance quadcopter fluidly through three dimensional space, that's not something that can be communicated with mere words. So there has to be a lot of pictures and illustrations to get that across. So as difficult as it is to sit there and actually write, you know, the copy for the book, you also have to figure out how you're going to, you know, visually communicate those things. So it was like, you know, a couple hours in the morning, you're actually just writing stuff down. And then the other hours, like I'm in 3D programs like Blender and Adobe Illustrator, trying to figure out like how to actually illustrate that and then put it on the page. So like this book in particular was pretty challenging to put together, to say the least.
So did you do all the animations yourself?
Yeah, all the illustrations. The entire book is completely my work. I hired a graphics designer just to kind of help me with templates and sort of like picking out like the style of the book, but ultimately everything in it, all the words, all the illustrations. And then I had to typeset the entire thing too. So, you know, it was basically like dragging and dropping a paragraph here, putting the picture there, and then making sure that everything would fit on an 8.5 by 11 pages. So it's wow. It's like 280 pages long, and each page is essentially almost like an individual poster almost that I had to like lay out and literally drag and drop everything onto and make sure that it would fit. So that process alone took almost 3 months of work just to get everything onto the page, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I believe it. I'm actually extremely impressed because I have a copy of the book and I've been reading through it, and I'm actually almost done, but it's, now that you say this, I even have even more of an appreciation for the book, because I can imagine the amount of work that it took to do this. So congrats to you. That's
man.
Very, very well done.
Yeah. It's been almost a year since I published it, and I look back at it now, and it's funny because I flip through it and I'm like, who made this thing? Because I don't even really remember doing it. It was all just a blur, you know. So it's nice to be able to just sort of hold it now. And, you know, for anyone out there who's looking to get into FPV and kind of wants like a, you know, sort of a step-by-step guide into, hey, what should I do and how should I do it? It's satisfying to be able to just say like, here you go, just read this.
So it sounds like you did put an extraordinary amount of work into it. You were very thorough with creating all these illustrations. And my question is, do you think there's anything missing from it that you wish you had included? Did anyone point anything out like, hey, I didn't see this? Or did anyone have any questions about something that you wish you had put in there now?
That's a pretty good question. A year after its publication, I don't know, I guess it would sound arrogant to say no, absolutely not, there's nothing, everything is in there, but I think it touches a little bit on pretty much all of the most important things. It doesn't go into super technical aspects like how to PID tune your quadcopter, or, you know, it talks a little bit about building and sort of specifications of components, but you know, when you're talking about a medium as static as, you know, print, you have to be very careful about what kind of information you want to put in it, because you don't want it to be, you know, outdated a month or two after its publication. So there's a lot of things that I guess I could have gone into more detail on, you know, like PID tuning and stuff, but the core fundamentals of FPV and the things that will stand the test of time that are not going to change are in there. You know what I mean? So like 5-10 years from now, so long as we're still flying multi-rotor drones that, you know, have propellers and they generate thrust and move through the air, and we have, you know, pitch, roll, yaw and throttle, then the fundamentals of the book are still going to be there. A lot of things will change, but so much will stay the same. And I wanted to really focus on the stuff that was going to be kind of evergreen.
Gotcha. I've listened to some of your podcasts in the past or when you've guested on them, and you talk a lot about flying at a high level. Is that what you hope, one, that your readers will get to? And then I'm just curious, as someone who's looking to get into FPV myself, what's the process like for becoming a high-level FPV pilot? How long do you think it would typically take? Not that everybody's the same, but...
Really depends on... So the way... the analogy that I constantly go back to in the book is that I kind of equate flying FPV with learning how to play an instrument, and specifically like playing the electric guitar. So in a lot of ways, you want to think about the quadcopter as being an instrument. It's sort of the medium through which you experience FPV flight. So it's not so much about flying the quadcopter as it is about manipulating the image that you're seeing in the goggles, in much the same way that, you know, when you're playing a guitar, it's not so much about the physical machinations of what your fingers are doing on the instrument. It's the way that the strings are vibrating and the sound that it's producing. So it's the same thing with FPV. It's about what you're seeing, and learning how to manifest that and change it at your will on the screen. So I talk about it in a lot of, ethereal ways in the book. But anyway, to keep with that analogy, I mean, if you want to get to the highest levels of FPV, then you have to equate it almost the same way as saying like, there's a professional guitarist up on stage right now who's just shredding through an improvised solo in front of 10,000 screaming fans, and they're making it look easy. I mean, that's something that's going to take you years of dedicated practice and study to be able to achieve. And it's the same thing with FPV. If you want to be able to freestyle at a high level, or if you want to be able to race competitively, then yeah, it's going to take many, many years. Myself, I probably have, close to 2,000 hours of experience all combined on the simulator and in real life. But on the flip side of that, I mean, if you, again, with the guitar analogy, you don't necessarily have to be the most technically proficient pilot in the world to be able to, A, have fun flying FPV, and then B, also, if you're just like a camera drone guy and you want to just be able to get some more dynamic shots with your drone that your regular DJI drone can't afford you, then you can actually learn with, a reasonable amount of time, maybe 100 hours or so, you can learn to fly pretty well and capture some great footage. So it's kind of like, Kurt Cobain, for instance. No one would ever accuse Kurt Cobain of being a technically proficient guitarist, but he's, incredibly famous, and he got his point across. If you want to just bang away on your guitar, you can learn to play, Smells Like Teen Spirit in a couple of months, and you can do it pretty well. Same thing with FPV. But, if you want to get up there and you want to shred like Joe Satriani or something, then you're expecting to, spend years of your life to get to that virtuosic level.
Makes sense.
No, that's a great analogy. I mean, it's a craft, right? It's a trade, and it's going to take years to get it to the high level. Speaking of which, how it's a scary. There's a big steep learning curve for beginners to get into FPV, specifically drones, because of equipment, because of knowledge, because of all of that. What do you recommend to someone who wants to begin this? They're a brand new listener here listening to us, and they've never touched an FPV drone before, and they want to get into it. What's your recommendation?
Number one recommendation is definitely to get into the simulator. So, I mean, this is pretty, tried and true advice that pretty much all FPV pilots would parrot. They tell you to get into the simulator. I take it a step further, and I would say, because you have someone who's motivated and they're like, okay, I want to learn how to fly FPV. I'm going to download the simulator. I'm going to get my transmitter set up, and then they get in the sim and it's just like, okay, well, what do I do now? I tell people the best thing that you can do if you want to really get better is to get into the simulator and specifically practice simulated racing. So you have to get onto a racetrack, you have to have the timer going, and you have to push yourself to actually go through that very rigid process of going through gate by gate by gate, because it's the best way for you to get that immediate and objective feedback on your performance. I think a lot of people, they'll go into the simulator and then they kind of just noodle around and they'll call it freestyle practice, and they kind of get into the same repetitive patterns of doing the same things over and over again, but they're not really being presented in a very immediate and objective way as to whether or not, am I doing it better than I did the last time? So easiest thing, get in the sim and get on a racetrack specifically. And that's true pretty much regardless of what your end goal in FPV is. If you just want to freestyle, get on a track. If you want to race, then obviously get on track. But also if you want to just learn how to fly smoothly and you want to get those awesome cinematic shots, then definitely get on the racetrack, because it's going to teach you how to, you know, move the drone fluidly and smoothly and make those nice, you know, S turns through the environment.
The nice cinematic flight. I'm glad you mentioned the simulator, mm-hmm. because I had that in my list of questions. What do you recommend for simulator? And you can talk about a brand maybe that you like, or what are the things that people should look for when they look for a simulator?
The one that I have the most experience on is definitely Velocidrone. I've flown pretty much all the simulators. A lot of it is kind of personal preference. Some of them feel a little weird. Some of them feel like you're flying a Greyhound bus through molasses. It just does not feel good at all. I won't name names, but Velocidrone is the one that I feel is the sharpest and crispest. None of them feel exactly the same. They're all going to be like a little bit floaty, but if you have everything, you know, dialed in and set up properly, it feels pretty much just as fluid as flying the real thing. One of the important things I would say, a really key takeaway, if you actually wanted to get into simulated flying, is that you need to have a semi-decent PC. It doesn't need to be, you know, like a souped up gaming PC per se, but you really want to have a high performance gaming monitor, something that's going to have a refresh rate of 144 hertz or higher. Because if you're trying to fly in the simulator on a monitor that has 60 hertz, it's going to be very choppy, very laggy, and it's not mm-hmm. going to feel fluid.
Yep.
You're going to have to, if anyone out there, you don't know what I'm talking about, you're going to have to Google and just look at 144 hertz monitor and how to set it up. I swear to you, the difference is night and day in the simulator. That's really the best way to do it.
So you talk about the negative trend, or you talk about transfer of knowledge or transfer of skills from the sim. I come from the manned aircraft world, and we use simulators there too. But from time to time, there's a negative transfer of knowledge or negative transfer of skills from the sim. What are some of the things that you see that are very different in the sim compared to flying the actual drone?
That's a good question. I think what the simulator does not simulate, obviously, all of the real world variables that you encounter. So, I mean, you know, if you're flying around, if you have a bent prop or something, you can feel that in real life. You have to be cognizant of voltage sag when you're flying in real life, because the simulator's not going to really, you know, emulate those real world variables. It doesn't do great with prop wash. And then also, I mean, you're just flying in a simulated environment. So the assets that populate those maps and those environments are really not detailed enough or to the proper scale to like truly emulate what it's like to fly in real life. What the simulator does a great job of is that it really gets you to make that, you know, that hand-eye connection mm-hmm. where you have the feeling of, okay, when I do this, the quad is going to move in a certain way, and it's going to cause the image again that I'm seeing on the screen to react in a certain way. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of wrapping your head around understanding when I rotate the sticks in certain ways, it's going to cause really the screen to move. It kind of goes back to that sort of those ethereal points that I talk about in the book, where it's like, listen, this is not about flying drones. This has nothing to do with flying drones. It's about mentally connecting your mind and your conscious will to the image that you're seeing on the screen and forcing that to manifest in the way that you want it to. So understanding that when I, you know, blend these inputs together and move my hands in a certain way, it's going to cause the screen to rotate in this particular way. Mm-hmm. That's really what the simulator helps you to do, is to make that connection. And then when you go out in the real world, it's pretty much one-to-one. You just have to be a little more on your game, because now you have, you know, real world variables and consequences to deal with. But
yeah, and that's what you talk in the book too, is the obviously that's the purpose of the book, is the dynamics, trying to understand and what the drone is doing from a dynamic standpoint, so that you can understand why when you input this control, this happens. To me, when I fly drones, especially FPV drones, that's what I like to understand. When I do this, the drone is doing this because of, and because of the aerodynamic forces and everything. So for those of you that have issues understanding how the drone flies, the book is perfect for that, because it will give you a really good idea of you know, why it's happening. I know you, I see you flipping through the book.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was just a really important concept that I called it the FPV feedback loop. So it's basically just the idea that you have like input, output, and feedback. So input is basically having the controller in your hand. So you're moving the stick in a certain way and it's transmitting a command to the flight controller. And then it's manipulating the RPM of the motors to alter the physical orientation of the quadcopter in the air in some way, right? So the input is the stick, the output is what the quad is actually doing. But ultimately, because we're flying FPV, you're not looking at the quad. What you're seeing is you're getting the feedback from the camera. So it's that input output feedback loop. And basically, yeah, so the book, like I went into great depth just sort of like breaking down, like when you move the stick like this, the quadcopter is going to do that. But ultimately it's important for you to remember that, you know, it's your, what you're going to see on the screen may not be all that intuitive, because you have, you know, this sort of effect here where you're flying the quadcopter in the first person view. And because the camera has a static fixed position and it's also elevated up, it's rotating in a way that's not completely aligned with its rotational axes, if that makes sense. Your FPV view through the goggles is not in perfect alignment with specifically the roll and the yaw inputs. And that's something that you have to kind of like really wrap your head around, and you have to figure out how to sort of blend those inputs to get the drone to do what you want it to do, because it's confusing and counterintuitive when you first get into it.
Because you're not seeing the drone from a third camera that's behind the drone. You're seeing the drone from the front of it. So yeah, I can see exactly what you're saying.
Yeah. Eventually you get to the point where you can just sort of, I talk about that too, is it's, you can almost visualize what the quadcopter is doing. I talk about it almost as like levels of transcendence almost, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's like the base level of consciousness is now sitting here in your human form. But then once you put the goggles on and you enter into the quadcopter, it's almost like you're transferring your consciousness from, you know, your mind into the drone. And then ultimately, when you get to a certain level in FPV, it's almost like your consciousness projects from outside of the drone and almost is following behind it. So while I'm flying, it's not necessarily like a first person view. It's almost as if I'm trailing slightly behind it and can see how the drone is manipulating in the air, sort of in my mind's eye. So it takes a while to get to that level when everything is just so dialed in that you just know what's happening. But at any moment, any given time, it doesn't matter what the drone is doing, how fast it's rotating, or in what direction. I know exactly where my rotor disc is pointing. I know what's up and down, and I can just visualize that perfectly.
Yep, that makes sense.
So, you know, if you want to get into FPV, I think traditionally you'd have to learn how to solder. I mean, if you're going to be hardcore about it, learn about radio frequencies. How do you think we could make it easier for people to enter the space? Because it does, on some level, feel a little bit intimidating.
Yeah. And you know what? I won't sugarcoat this and try and it's extremely intimidating, and the hobby can be really frustrating, you know, to be honest with you. It's just kind of the nature of the beast, I guess. I mean, when you're dealing with sort of these delicate, sensitive electronics and you're sending them through the air at really high speeds, inevitably you're going to crash, you're going to break stuff. So it's kind of hard to solve that problem. How do you make something that's going to be durable and super plug and play? Right now, we don't really have great solutions for that, to be honest with you. It is it's most definitely a lot easier to get into it now than it was when I first started, for sure. I mean, there's no better time to get into FPV than right now. It's more user-friendly than it ever has been, but inevitably, yeah, you're going to have to bite the bullet and you're going to have to learn how to do things like basic soldering, for sure, because you have to learn how to put Humpty Dumpty together again. That's just part of the game.
Yeah. So speaking of, maybe it's easier, and I'm saying this about DJI's FPV drone for our listeners. I know you're probably already familiar with what the drone can do, but with DJI entering the FPV space with a drone that in normal and sport mode can hover and can return to home. What's your opinion on that? How do you, has it impacted the FPV community at all? What's your, just want to know what your thoughts are.
I'll start off by saying I'm a bit of a DJI fanboy. Like I said, I my first drone was a Phantom. I have a Mavic. I love their products. I fly on DJI digital goggles. So I like DJI. I think it's good for the hobby. Whenever the 800-pound gorilla in the drone space is, you know, making an effort to put out products for our little niche industry, then that's a good thing. Now that I said my disclaimer, I think that the FPV, the DJI FPV drone is quite literally the worst drone that you could possibly get if you want to learn how to fly FPV. I honestly, it's one of those products that I just don't understand who it was really made for. Because it's not something that's going to attract, you know, a seasoned pilot who already knows how to build and who can already, you know, fly. But it's not solving any true problems for beginners. And actually, it's exacerbating a lot of the problems that beginners have in the way that it's not easy to work on it. You know, it has plastic components as opposed to carbon fiber. It's not very durable. Everything is sort of, you know, in its own ecosystem. You can't swap anything out easily. You know, you're going to crash it, and then you're just kind of left spending a bunch of money to send it back into DJI to have them send it back to you a couple of weeks later. You're never going to be able to learn on something like that. You're going to have to just bite the bullet and learn how to piece things together and solder them up yourself.
I couldn't agree more. As someone who reviewed it for DP Review, I had to be sent another unit because the first time I put it into acro mode, it crashed into the ground. And so I think it gives people, I mean, they've purposely made it difficult to switch into full manual mode. You have to go through a few items in the menu just to get there. But all that being said, I think people get overly confident after flying in their normal and sport mode. And then they realize, you know, once you're in manual mode, the drone's not going to hover anymore. I mean, you really have to know what you're doing. So anyway,
I mean, you're in total manual control of the drone at that point, and you have to understand the, you know, the forces that are acting on it. You have to understand that, you know, you're angled forward and you have to be able to appropriate a certain amount of your total thrust output to positive lift and forward thrust. And you have to understand, you have to be able to understand when you're looking through the goggles, when you see certain cues, it means that the orientation is changing in certain ways. And it means that you need to, you know, increase or decrease your attitude and increase or decrease your, you know, total throttle output in order to do all those things. So, I mean, if you're just accustomed to like, I push the stick forward and it does this. And when I let go, it just stops. And then all of a sudden you kick it into manual mode and it's like, oh, I'm like, you know, I'm in a rally car right now and I'm in total command of this thing. And if you don't really understand what you're doing or why certain things are happening, that, yeah, it's just a recipe for disaster. You're going to crash it. It's going to do a lot of damage because, again, it's not that durable. And then ultimately you're just kind of left with an expensive paperweight because you can't fix the thing, you know? So how do you get in the kind of hours that I was talking about before, even 100 hours, how are you going to get that on something where you're crashing it maybe after 2 minutes and then you have to spend 2 weeks to send it into DJI and get it back? It's just not going to work.
So it's funny. I have a completely different perspective for the DJI FPV. And that's going to lead into my question, but I wanted to mention to me what the DJI FPV did is it actually gave me a little bit of boost of confidence to go and fly an FPV drone, knowing that I had the failsafe pause button that would go into GPS mode. And if something happened, I would push it and then I wouldn't crash the drone actually. So I've been flying it actually quite a bit, and it's allowed me to move to a fully manual drones that we built here in the studio. And that gave me that boost of confidence that I think I would not have gotten as quickly from a typical drone. So that's my experience using the FPV drone. But now with that being said, I think one of the difficulty with FPV is the fact that you can't pause in flight. You don't have that GPS mode. And we have a lot of people that are coming into this world with the GPS drones, with the RTH drones. And I think And that, I guess that's where my question comes in, is do you think in the future we will see more GPS / RTH type of drones? And by the way, for those of you listening, RTH, return to home. And do you think that would help grow the FPV community?
Those are all excellent questions and excellent points. I think that, yeah, over time, we're definitely going to see sort of more hybrid drones where you're going to see high performance multi-rotors that do have better features on them and more modern features that you would get on a traditional camera drone. So there's definitely going to be a bit of that blend in the future. I like your point that, listen, I mean, if it's something that helps you to gain some confidence and it gets you up in the air and it gets you going, and that's, you're willing to pay that price tag for that, and you can do that, then that's great. I'm happy that it exists. On the other end of it, and I hate to sound like I'm being like a snooty elitist drone snob or an FPV snob, but also I think that if you want to get into FPV, then you really have to understand that fundamentally there is a huge difference between what a camera drone does and what an FPV drone does. And I don't think that the answer is to necessarily just say like, oh, well, we just need to make that easier. In my mind, there's a fundamental disconnect then if you're trying to make it easier. It's not meant to be easy. It's a fully dynamic experience. It's completely manual. It is basically the antithesis of everything that a camera drone is. So you might want to make it a little bit less punishing, I guess, in terms of, you know, time on the bench and repairing things and the kind of money that it takes to sort of stay in the air. But in terms of, you know, making safety features that are going to be able to, you know, just sort of bail you out, it's really difficult to think of, you know, crash mitigation features on an FPV drone that are not going to just neuter the experience, you know, because it either has to come at the expense of the pilot's control over the machine or over the quadcopter's performance. And once you get to a certain level, it's like, you know, I'm not willing to give those things up. You know, it's the same thing with like learning guitar. You know, if you want to learn guitar, then you have to learn guitar. You can't just like, you know, go to your PlayStation and plug in Guitar Hero and just press your four buttons and say like, I'm playing guitar now. You're not. You need to actually put the time in and play the, you know, the real instrument. And you gotta just go through those learning curves and take your licks with it, you know?
It's the training wheels, right? It's the FPV, the DJI FPV is more like having the training wheels on and then eventually take those off and then go do BMX tricks and everything.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's the thing. You have to learn to react and you have to learn to just become one with the quad in a way. You can't, you know, always rely on the fact that like, oh, I can just kind of like, maybe I can flip this button and all of a sudden it's going to just like stop and bail me out. Mm-hmm. Like it's not, things happen way too fast. That's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm. So this next question might be a little bit anecdotal on my part. My car was in the shop for 6 weeks because it took that long to find the replacement parts that it needed. When I go to the grocery store now, I see a lot of, not a lot of empty shelves, but it seems a little bit more empty. Do you think there is a supply chain shortage when it comes to FPV parts? How do you think it's going to impact the difficulty going forward with getting certain parts, or what's it going to do to the price? What in your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely seen in the past year, really, there's been quite a bit of shortages. You go on any of the major FPV retailers like at FPV and Rotor Riot. I mean, they've been out of stock on a lot of stuff for, you know, a while, and it's just been across the board consistent with everyone. So, I mean, yeah, in the past year, it's been difficult to source electronics. It hasn't really affected me personally too much, only because I tend to stock up on stuff and I don't crash as much anymore. So I don't need to be ordering parts constantly, but I have seen that the shortages have definitely affected the prices, and there is certainly a scarcity that's associated with it. I get marketing emails all the time from, you know, get FPV and race day quads, and they're like, we're finally back in stock. We've got like 100 units of this. And then you go the next day and it's like already sold out because everybody wants the same thing, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's, I mean, that's definitely a consideration.
Do you think there'll be a big market for 3D printing? Or should more people learn how to 3D print parts? I don't know. I mean, just from the way you describe it, sounds crazy.
There's some great 3D printing companies that do that right now. Actually, Brain 3D. Okay. I mean, they make all sorts of TPU printed accessories for everything. You know, you can get TPU mounts for every style of HD action cam on basically every style of frame. So there's a lot of people who are doing that and doing it well.
Okay. So I guess my next question is also anecdotal a little bit. I know maybe a handful of women that are in FPV. One goes by Rue FPV, the other Mai on High. So I should really say a couple. What do you think we could take steps to get more women actively involved or encourage them? What do you think that looks like, if that's even an issue?
I know Mai on High, Lexi Jansen. She's great. I did an interview with her on her channel a while back. She actually has a lot of really great content on her channel. Yeah. So for everyone who's listening, go check out Mai on High. She does some awesome Velocidrone training videos where she comes up with different tracks and gets people to focus on a particular element and then, you know, talks through about how she's doing it. As far as women in FPV, it's definitely a male dominated thing. I think I've heard, from people in the know, that something like 99.5% of the FPV community is male based on the demographics of sales that they have. So, I don't know. It's tough to say. I think for the most part, most of the guys in the FPV community are very welcoming and supportive, really, of everyone and anyone. I've seen quite a few, you know, women in FPV, and I think it's good, but it's just a difficult hobby for anyone to get into, really.
Yeah, this is true, and you've mentioned that several times. And I also do NFTs, and like only 5% of NFT sales have gone to women in the past 6 months. So when I see these discrepancies, as someone with a voice, I always think, you know, who can I tap just to ask for advice on trying to get more women involved or have women more visible in these areas? But it is welcoming. The drone industry in particular is very welcoming to women, and so it's good to hear that in FPV that's the same way as well.
Yeah, I mean, as far as what we could specifically do, I wouldn't know. But just knowing the FPV community and the type of people that are in it, I know that everyone is just a very, you know, welcoming and accepting, and is very willing to help everyone, you know, of any denomination out. So I don't know what we could specifically do to help, but. Yeah, I mean, again, with a male-dominated thing, a lot, everything is kind of like marketed towards men. FPV is kind of marketed as being sort of like a very like aggressive kind of, you know, like racing freestyle, badass motors, that kind of thing. So I don't know. I guess it could be a little difficult for women to get into it. But I think when they do, I think that they would find that they would be welcome with open arms by the rest of the community.
Yeah, amazing. Well, that's great to know.
I want to talk about FPV racing. You know, I watch I'm not going to remember their name, the racing, the DRL, the Drone Racing League. And we see a lot of younger kids that are, and I'm going to call them kids because they are fairly young and trying to compete and competing with people that are getting a little bit older that have been in the community for a while. Do you think the FPV skills diminish with age eventually over time?
Yes and no. I mean, it's definitely something that, I mean, yes and no. FPV is very much based on, you know, it's just sort of like Twitch reaction time. So, I mean, like anything, if you're younger, you're going to be better at playing like a first person shooter or something. And I think that flying FPV in a lot of ways is like, you know, playing a video game, but you know, it's something that you definitely learn to grow with. I mean, I don't see myself losing any skill as I get old. I'm 36 years old. So, I mean, compared to these other kids that are in the DRL, like I'm a dinosaur, you know, they're like 16, 17 years old and they're doing amazing things. They're at absolute virtuosos. But I mean, once it might be a little, it might take you a little longer if you're older, just to get sort of the rote mechanics of it down. But once you learn the fundamentals of it, I really think that anyone at any age could learn to fly at a reasonably high level. It just might take you a little bit longer. You know, I mean, the kids just, they just connect to it instantly. I've seen kids that get on a simulator and within like, you know, 50 to 100 hours, they're doing stuff that I'm just like, all right, I'm too old for this now, you know?
Well, it's a generational thing as well. I think, you know, growing up with, and you're a little bit younger than I am, but we grew up with the first consoles. And so we do have a little bit of that, which slightly older people may not have that background. And the younger kids, of course, they've lived with it their whole life. So yeah, it's a different approach.
There's also, I mean, the aspect of, I mean, if you're younger and you're hungry for that and you want to get up on the podium and you want to compete and you want to be the best and you want to be the next, you know, rock star freestyler, then that's obviously going to really motivate you to get better too. If you're kind of, you know, older and you want to pick it up as a hobby and it's like, hey, I just want to go out to the park and fly around, or I just want to get some cool cinematic shots, then you might not be as driven to get to those levels, but you still could for sure.
So speaking of cinematic shots, what is the coolest drone FPV video you've ever seen?
Oh God, I've seen so many.
So many. I know. It's hard to, I mean, what comes to the top of my mind is J. Bird Christensen's bowling alley video, where he did a one take through that whole alley and even landed the FPV in one of, I guess where the ball gets flushed out and back and sent back.
Yeah,
I'm curious. I mean, there's a lot. You're right.
There's so many different sort of genres of FPV cinematic. I really like the one that you bring up, the J-Bird films. And yeah, Christensen, I forget his first name, but he a really phenomenal pilot. I like that sort of one take cinewhoop. Mm-hmm. That's really, really challenging to get right. Also, not kind of on a tangential thing, like while I was watching that video, the pilot is incredibly talented, but as an FPV pilot, like I know what he's doing and I know, like, you know, the difficulty of certain things. I was most impressed by like how well coordinated everyone else in the shot was, you know, to be able to get, you know, the people to be rolling the ball right while he's coming up behind it and to go between people's legs, you know, to coordinate that and choreograph it is amazing. I like the outdoor shots a lot too. I really like, you know, sort of ridge surfing along mountains and diving, anything that can just bring that sort of exciting dynamic aspect to a shot that, you know, traditional aerial platforms are just not capable of achieving. That's really where FPV shines. So just watching other pilots fly and seeing how their mind works and seeing how they're using that tool to capture something and show people from a totally novel perspective that really no one on earth has ever seen before is just really an exciting thing.
Yeah, I agree. I think it took him 16 takes to get that one shot right. J-Bird's bowling film, impressive nonetheless when you say how coordinated everyone was. You know, some of my friends run an Instagram account called Skybangers, and several people emailed me this clip that they shared where the FPV drone goes down the side of a waterfall, but not only that, it goes into it and manages to come out with a few water drops on the camera, and then the water drops dissipate and it continues to fly. But
I think I might have seen that.
Think everyone has at this point.
Was that recent? I think Captain Vanover released something like that. Yeah, so he dove and he went behind it and spiraled. Yeah, I saw that exact video. That's a really cool shot.
I haven't been on Instagram lately. I've been trying to stay off social more and just complete some projects. But several people emailed me. It was the clip. It was really kind of impressive how he was able to pull that off. So
yeah, so immersive and dynamic and draws you in. And I mean, how many times have you seen a waterfall, but you've never seen a waterfall from, you know, diving from back inside, and coming out?
You've never gone through a waterfall. It's kind of crazy.
Is there a location where you would like to fly, but you haven't had a chance yet, or you would like to fly, but maybe you can't fly there because it's illegal? And is there a bucket list item that you have?
Yeah, I mean, I actually used to live in Manhattan for about 10 years. So there's tons of places in the city that I would love to just kind of go in and like a gorilla, just kind of get in there and kind of throw the quad up and get some footage and come back. But obviously that's highly illegal. So yeah, I'd like to fly in, you know, densely urban locations like that and be able to get shots like, you know, diving down the side of the Empire State Building or something. But, you know, that, yeah, that would be my bucket list, but
that's cool.
Yeah, it's too bad New York has so many restrictions, but there's so many helicopters in the area. There's not really much that's ever going to change with that.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
No. Maybe someday.
I'll maybe someday.
So
it'd be cool to go to Shanghai.
Oh, go on. That would be crazy. Yeah. I was just going to transition because this is, I think, a good transition to kind of the next topic, which is the regulation. Many in the FPV community feel like there is a little bit too much regulation for flying drones for recreational purposes. What are your thoughts on that?
Yes, I agree. yeah, that's the short answer of it. I mean, yeah, the remote ID is something that I kind of vehemently opposed for a number of reasons. I mean, first of all, not from the obvious, from an FPV pilot's standpoint, I think it's just a, you know, a ridiculous overreach on the FAA's part to try and regulate something, you know, like that. It seems silly that they want to just, you know, come down and tell me that you are not allowed to do this in even your backyard. You know, we are, you know, masters and commanders of all airspace in the US, and we want to tell you what you can and can't do here. I think that seems ridiculous, but also just kind of the bureaucracy that's associated with it. It really seems as though they just kind of sold off Class G airspace to the highest bidder. And now you have, you know, massive companies like Amazon and Alphabet that are basically writing the legislation for them. Plus, I just like, you know, the whole concept of remote ID is something that I just, it seems very dystopian in 1984 to me, you know. And you can tell me like, hey, Christian, take your tinfoil hat off. But I just see it being like, if you just extrapolate that out, you know, to the DMV all of a sudden saying like, hey, the FAA had something really great with that remote ID thing. So now come 2025, we're going to start, you know, putting remote ID tags on every new license plate that we issue. And we're going to start installing, you know, RFID readers on the exits of every single highway. And we're going to just track where you go. And hey, if you don't like it, well, you could just, you know, you can use the Frias if you want, or the side streets. You don't have to go on the main highway. So for me, just seeing a governmental agency like that trying to assume that kind of power is something that's kind of scary and goes beyond just, they want to put, you know, a little transponder on my quad that's going to degrade its performance envelope and it's going to be annoying to me, you know. So I, there's a lot of things about remote ID that I just really don't like. I don't know how much of it they're actually going to get through. And then also whatever does come through, I'm not sure how much of it will be enforceable or how much the FPV community will comply with it. My only fear is that it will add restrictions to something that is already difficult to get into. And it may, you know, just put an even harder stranglehold on FPV and put up more barriers for people to get in that may, you know, just affect the health of the community over time.
Yeah, I know there are people like Jonathan Ruprecht who are challenging remote ID right now, and good on him and anyone else who is taking a stance, because it is, there are way too many restrictions and it is overreaching. How do you think, I mean, you already kind of touched on it, but how specifically do you think it's going to impact the FPV community?
Honestly, it's so hard to tell. And I really don't think anyone can say specifically, especially because we're still not, we haven't really gotten the final ruling on it. And there is also open lawsuits. Tyler Brennan with Race Day Quads has been very outspoken on it and has, you know, raised a lot of money from the community and invested a lot of his own money into taking the FAA to court. And I haven't kept up on it you know, 100%, but from what I've been seeing, it seems like they have a legitimate case and, you know, they may actually be able to enact some change with it. So, I mean, at this point, we don't really know what it's going to look like in its finalized past form. And then also, like I said, it's difficult to say how, whether or not they can actually enforce those things. So I think a lot of people in the FPV community will probably adopt the stance of, you know, civil disobedience and just not comply, really.
Yeah. And I mean, kudos to those people who, well, I don't know. I shouldn't make a definitive statement, but I think you are right.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't mean to be like totally blasé about it. I'm someone who flies very responsibly and I don't do stupid things and I don't think other people should do stupid things. It's like when I go on to Instagram and I see a pilot do some of the things that I was just talking about, like, oh, I would love to go to, you know, New York and like dive the Empire State Building. If I see someone with a clip doing that, I'm like, that's not good. You know, that's drawing attention to it. That's being irresponsible. You shouldn't fly that way. So I'm not saying just like abandon all the rules and, you know, like we're just a bunch of skateboard graffiti guys that are like, whatever, FPV is not a crime. Mm-hmm. But in this for the sake of remote ID, I'd say, do not comply, but fly safely and responsibly.
Yeah. And the fact is that most of you don't really fly over 100 feet above ground level anyway. I mean, you're pretty close to the ground and pretty, you know, you're going in close proximity to objects. It's not like you're way up there in airspace anyway, even near helicopters.
Yeah. So. Yeah, there's nothing up there. I stay below the tree line. If my drone is in the way of a plane, then the plane has much bigger problems than my drone does.
That is something we hear a lot from the FPV community, is the concept of shielded operation. And hopefully this is something the FAA looks seriously into, that shielded ops. We're getting towards the end of the interview, and it's been very insightful and a lot of great information. But I always have one last question for our guests, which is, and for you, that might be difficult because you fly a lot. What is your favorite drone to fly?
My favorite drone? My favorite frame is the 5-inch Apex. So I fly with an Apex. I fly with 2207 1850 kV motors on pretty aggressive propellers. So, and if you guys are into FPV, then you know what I'm talking about. I like high-pitched aggressive props that are like 4.5-inch pitch. So I like to go fast and hard on the quad, and I like to fly the 5-inch ape. It's difficult to say like an archetypal drone when you're talking about FPV, because all of them are like just Frankenstein together with all different components. Yeah. So it's not like one thing I can point to and say like, that's my favorite. You know, you grow into your own machine and you learn like what you like, and eventually you find your own thing. So that's what I'm flying right now. But
well, that's awesome. Well, Christian, thanks a lot for your time. Like I said, this has been very insightful. Where can people find more information about the book, about yourself, and or anything else?
FPV Flight Dynamics is available pretty much everywhere. If you want to get a printed copy of it, it's for $29.99 on Amazon. Get FPV, Race Day Quads, Rotor Riot, and Pyro Drone. They all sell it. And then if you're looking for a digital copy of it, you can get the ebook for $9.99. If you're on a PC and you want Kindle, you can get that on Amazon. Otherwise, you can go to Apple eBooks or you can go to Google Play. So it's pretty much in every format and it's everywhere.
That's awesome. Well, if you're new to the show, make sure that you subscribe so you get new episodes. We post new episodes every Tuesday. And in the meantime, give us a like, leave a comment for Christian, and we'll answer that. And that's all we have. So we'll see you guys next week. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, guys.